that. Jane yanked the cloak more tightly around her and jumped to her feet. Gifford Dudley, eyes to yourself. He laughed and began taking off his boots, and then his socks, and then his belt. What are you doing?
It's morning, he explained as he continued undressing. These are my only clothes. The guards gave them to me when I was moved from the stables to the tower, so it would be a real shame to ruin them in my transformation. His shirt went next, revealing the contours of his chest. Jane tried not to stare. When he began tugging at his trousers, she beeped, clapped her hands over her eyes and spun away.
Have you no shame?
None at all.
And I don't suppose you brought clothes for me?
He whinnied in reply. Jane turned around.
No clothes for me?
She repeated to her husband, the horse. Gifford didn't answer. She bit her lip and eyed the clothing strewn over the ground. Trousers. How degrading. But less degrading, possibly, than spending the day wrapped in a thin cloak and nothing else. A sharp bark pierced the air, startling her. Pet had circled back to find them all just standing around doing nothing. She barked again, and Jane remembered the soldiers still pursuing them. They had to hurry. Gifford's plan had been all well and good, but what kind of plan was go somewhere safe? Now that she was the sole human of the group, the decisions were up to her, she supposed, because no one here was capable of talking back.
First, she decided, she would get dressed. Gifford, she cleared her throat, I don't want to question your honour,
but that's exactly what I'm doing. She threw the cloak over his head so that he couldn't peek at her while she put on the clothes he'd just discarded. Gifford the horse made a huffing sound, but held still as she dressed. His clothes were warm and slightly sweaty. They smelled of horse. Everything was much too big, but she tightened the belt as small as it would go and rolled the hems of her pants and sleeves. Then she tied her hair into a quick braid and freed Gifford of his blind.
"So, I'm to ride on your back?" she asked nervously. "And break horse rule 3?"
He tossed his head in the affirmative. She tromped over in 2 large boots to inspect the other horse's saddle. She'd read about saddles in The Great Saddle Controversy, Pros and Cons of Various Saddles and the Best Choice for a Patriotic Englishman. This saddle only vaguely resembled the one she'd seen sketched in the book, but how hard could it be? Seat, saddle tree, girth, blanket? There was a small saddlebag as well, but Jane didn't open it to inspect its contents. No time. Pet let out a yip. Hurry, she seemed to say.
Hold your horses,
Jane muttered, as she began to unsaddle the borrowed horse. This proved to be a challenge, since the horse was much taller than she, and the saddle weighed at least half what she did, but finally she managed to haul it off and dump it on the ground. The pad of blanket underneath was damp with sweat, but she didn't have a choice except to drape it over Gifford's back with an apology. Still, she was wearing his clothes. He could wear their horse's blanket. Next came the saddle again. Gifford was at least kind enough to walk over to a large rock, flat enough for Jane to stand on, but his movement had gotten the blanket all out of place, so she had to drop the saddle, fix the blanket, and urge Gifford to stay still while she adjusted the saddle into place. With some difficulty, she fitted the girth strap into its buckle and tugged as tight as she dared. When she hopped off the rock to inspect her work, she realized horse Gifford looked a lot rounder than normal.
Are you holding your breath?
Gifford blew out and resumed his normal proportions while Jane tried again to tighten the girth. By now, Pet was running circles around the group. Jane gave the girth strap one more good yank. Gifford dramatically heaved a breath and then reached for the other horse's bridle. Gifford shied away from her, snorting. The message was clear. She might be able to break horse rules 1 and 3, but horse rule 2 still stood. No bridling the horse.
Fine, but at least let me take this off. I don't want him to trip on the reins.
She unbuckled the other horse's bridle and let it slide to the ground. Then she grabbed the saddlebag and strapped it onto Gifford. pet whined and barked and circled again, tighter. Both horses' ears flickered backward. Even Jane could hear the pounding of hooves now. Mary's men were catching up. She threw herself onto Gifford's back and tried not to fall off as he launched himself like an arrow in the direction they'd been heading before, the other horse following close behind. Jane tried to keep her head down. Twigs and brush snapped around her as Gifford ran tirelessly on. He leapt and swerved and pounded through the trees and close underbrush, sure-footed and strong, and even when the forest became too thick for speed, he stubbornly continued forward. They'd been going for a while when, as abruptly as he'd started, Gifford stopped. The other horse stopped too, and Pet, who sat down a few feet away. For a minute they all just stood there, breathing hard. "What are we doing?" Jane hissed. The other horse began ripping up bites of grass. Gifford bobbed his head as if acknowledging a good idea, and nibbled on his own patch of greenery. "Gifford, this is not the ideal time to take a break," Jane admonished him, leaning over his neck. "The soldiers are still close." Gifford shook his head so his mane rubbed across her face. She spat out horsehair, straining to hear anything under the wind-rustling trees and the horse teeth grinding grass into a gross green pulp. "This is stupid," she commented. Then, without warning, Gifford turned on the other horse and bit the air close to his nose. The horse, previously believing Gifford to be a friendly man-horse, reared up and screamed. Jane shrieked and clutched the pommel as tightly as she could while Gifford pushed forward, snapping and lunging at the other horse. He circled around him, blocking the jagged path of the way they'd come, until the poor creature had no choice but to peel off into the woods. They listened to the horse crash through the underbrush. Then Jane, Gifford, and Pet were alone. Jane pressed her hands against her chest and dropped her forehead against Gifford's neck. "That was mean," she said, and reached forward to flick his ear. "He was a nice horse." Gifford blew out a breath and immediately began picking his way through the woods, doubling back to the deer trail. "So as to leave less of a trail," Jane realized. Now anyone who followed them here would likely follow the new trail the other horse had left, not expecting Jane and Gifford to go back the way they'd come. "I see now," Jane said. "I guess I forgot the plan. That was still mean, though. You should try to be nicer to the other horses. You're herd animals. Who will you run with if he goes back to tell the others of your two-faced personality? Who will you compare apple notes with? Soon you won't have any friends but me." They ran on and on until the sky turned a fiery red. They'd lost their pursuers hours ago. No baying dogs or thundering horses behind them now, but they still kept up a steady pace through the woods. She was just about to suggest that they make camp when they came upon a small, abandoned farm. Gifford paused at the edge of the trees, giving Jane a chance to appraise the tumble-down cottage and the barn tucked behind it. "This seems a good place to spend the night, doesn't it?" Gifford made a noise that sounded like assent, and she slid from his back to look around. Pet ran with her, tail flagged with canine joy, stopping every few feet to check for danger. They found none. The cottage was in bad shape, the thatched roof caved in and the rooms full of birds and mouse nests, but the barn still seemed intact. They could take shelter there. Jane's legs were shaky from riding so long, and her whole body felt weak with hunger, but she was able to haul open the barn door just wide enough for a saddled horse to fit through, and then Gifford trotted inside, pausing to nose at her shoulder as he passed. "I'm so hungry I could eat a horse." "Sorry, G, not you, of course." She pulled the door closed. There was a rusty lantern hanging on the wall, and she moved to light it. Then she turned to Gifford. "Now, let me take that saddle before you ruin it when you change." Pet zipped around the barn, sniffing here and there. Then, just as Jane was about to get to work, Pet ran back to the door and scratched to be let out. She looked decidedly uncomfortable. "You should have gone before we came inside," Jane muttered and opened the door a crack. Alone with her horse husband, Jane set about unbuckling the girth and relieving him of his humiliation. He shook and stretched at the sudden freedom, then, to Jane's horror, rolled onto his back and rubbed himself against the dirt floor. "Now that's just ridiculous!" Jane snapped the blanket, making drops of sweat fly off, and laid it over a post to dry. The saddle followed. It wasn't long before sundown, so she dropped the cloak near him and dug through the saddlebag to search for additional clothing. Nothing. Instead, she found a bag of cured meat and two containers of water. She'd drunk an entire flask of water and wolfed down nearly half the meat before she realized she ought to wait for Gifford to change and give him the bigger share. Surely he was as hungry and thirsty as she was. He'd been on his feet all day. "It seems we're going to have to fight for the clothes," Jane said. "One of us should get the shirt and trousers, and the other the cloak. As for the boots, they don't fit me anyway, so you'll just have to keep carrying me." A burst of light filled the barn, and then Gifford said, "As you wish." "Gee!" Jane spun around to find Gifford just pulling the cloak around himself. Impetuously, she ran to embrace him in spite of their awkward and scandalous, though they were married, so did it really count as scandalous, clothing situation. "Jane!" He wrapped his arms around her and kissed the top of her head. It surprised her, this sudden gesture of affection, but she welcomed it.
"We survived the day," she said against his chest. "We both kept our heads. Hurrah for us!"
A laugh rumbled through him. "So we did. Hurrah!" She pulled away to smile up at him and felt a paper crinkle in her breast pocket.
"What's this?"
She vaguely remembered feeling a folded parchment in the shirt earlier, but she'd been too busy fleeing for her life to give it any attention. She took it out and instantly recognized her own handwriting. It was the letter she'd sent to Edward before she'd left for her honeymoon. "Peter Bannister slid that under my door in Beecham Tower." Almost hesitantly, Gifford brushed Jane's face and smoothed back her hair. "I thought you might want to keep it."
"Thank you."
All at once she felt safe for the first time since their last night in the country house. She was tempted to snuggle back into the circle of his arms, but the letter seemed important.
"Why would Peter Bannister want you to have this?" she asked.
"I don't know. I thought he was just giving me something of yours, to comfort me." She turned the paper over. On the back there was a single word scrawled, "Skunk." Her breath caught.
"This is Edward's handwriting."
Gifford frowned. "Edwards?"
"Edwards. I'd know his writing anywhere. You see how he shapes the S? When we were younger, we had this one terrible tutor. Richard Cox was his name, and he was always going on about Edward's ghastly penmanship. 'You should write like a king,' he always chided him. He made the king copy pages and pages of the letter S."
She smiled at the memory.
"Poor dear Edward."
"Yes, poor dear Edward," Gifford agreed faintly. "So what does skunk mean?"
"I don't know. She gasped. "Our gran, my great-grandmother, his grandmother, turned into a skunk. She was banished to an old abandoned castle in the north years ago. I visited her there. It's called Helmsley."
"Does that mean Edward is alive?"
"I think it does." She hugged Gifford again, elated by the idea of seeing her cousin. "If Edward's alive, then he's heading to Gran's, and we can go there too, and then everything will be all right, you'll see, and you and I can—"
Jane turned into a ferret. 21. Gifford. Before G had time to be surprised about Jane's transformation, something scratched at the barn door. G partly drew his sword from its sheath. Not that he was really any good with a sword, but G was masterful at this particular bluff, to act like he could fight. Sometimes the act was all that was needed. "Who's there?" he called out, his heart hammering. There was an urgent whine in response. G opened the door and Pet flew in. She let out a couple of shrill barks, ran out the door, ran back to Gifford, ran outside, and then stared out into the night, one paw lifted, frozen. "What's she trying to say?" G asked Jane the ferret. Jane responded by scurrying up G's leg, then up his shirt, then snaking around his neck and ending up on top of his head. At this point, G realized he'd just asked a ferret what the dog said. With his Jane hat in place, G squinted into the darkness, trying to figure out what had gotten Pet in such a fluster. Pet ran a few yards out, turned, and panted at G. She leaned even farther away from the barn, as if she would take off in that direction if only G would follow. "Pet," G said, "remember the bad soldiers? Right now is not a good time to travel, especially when I'm not a horse and therefore we have no speed." Pet darted back inside the barn, and with a flash of light, suddenly she was a girl. A naked girl with long, tangled blonde hair. Naked, with no clothes on. "I caught His Majesty's scent," she exclaimed. A soft tail swept across G's cheeks and came to rest right in front of his eyes, but G could still see the flash of light as Pet transformed back into a dog. He stood there for a long moment, flummoxed. "Did you see the less formally attired girl who was just here?" he asked Jane. She dug her claws into his head. "Did you have any idea Pet was a girl? Although she didn't look very comfortable as a girl, she didn't make any motion to cover herself." This time Jane scratched his face. "Not that I noticed." Pet emitted a high-pitched bark again and pointed her nose outside the barn, and it wasn't until that moment that she remembered she had said words while standing there, naked. "You caught King Edward's scent," G said. Pet barked twice and ran back to the door. "We can't go now," G argued. "It's too dangerous." With another flash, she was the naked girl.
"We have to go now. It's already faint, and the rain will make it worse."
She flashed to the dog again. This time, Jane hadn't had a chance to cover his eyes. How did Pet switch forms so easily when G, and now Jane, apparently, were governed by the sun? He'd have to focus on that later. "Pet, we have no supplies," the dog growled. "All right, all right. We go now." G grabbed his cloak and saddlebag, removed his lady from his head to set on his shoulder, and they followed Pet out into the night. Pet was a fast tracker. With her nose to the ground, she slipped along, somehow maintaining a swift pace without breaking contact between her nostrils and the dirt. G tried to keep up. At least the moon was especially bright tonight, making it easier for G to keep from stumbling. They had to stop often so that G could catch his breath. During one of these rests, with Ferret Jane asleep around his neck, Pet flashed into a girl and stood before him.
"Why can't you just change?"
G averted his eyes from her southern hemisphere, and then from her northern hemisphere, and then decided the only safe place to look was the stars. "I can't control it. It's a curse. When the sun's down, I'm human. When it's up, I'm a steed." Okay, steed was probably pushing it. Pet groaned.
"Get your house in order."
"My house? I have no house."
"Not the one over there," she said,
pointing in the direction of London. He could see her pointing out of the corner of his eye, even though his gaze was still averted.
"Your house in here."
She poked his forehead and then his chest. "Ow!" G said. Her fingers were incredibly strong. "Ow! How am I supposed to..." But she flashed back to her dog form and began running again before he could finish his question. They ran and rested and ran again. Breathless and panting, G longed for the sunrise, partly because it would give his human feet a break, and partly because Pet seemed thoroughly unimpressed by his long-distance running and she refused to hide it. Then Pet stopped and looked around, confused. She sniffed in one direction, then the other, and didn't pick one. She sniffed out every possible path and even up the trunks of a few trees, and then she lay down and whimpered, her brown eyes drooping at the corners. "What's the matter, girl?" G crouched down and stroked Pet's head. A flash of light, and Pet was a girl, and G was still crouched over her, stroking her hair. It was a move that definitely breached the boundaries of propriety. He leapt back so quickly he almost threw Jane the ferret into the trees. Pet the girl looked like she might cry.
"His Majesty was travelling with one other person. I was tracking both of their scents."
Her nose wrinkled as if she found the smell of this mystery person unpleasant.
"But His Majesty's scent, it stops. Something bad happened here."
Before G could ask her to explain, she flashed back into a dog. She seemed more comfortable that way, as if she could better manage her despair in that form. G felt his little ferret shaking on his shoulder, and knew that Jane must be fearing the worst for Edward.
"He's okay,"
G whispered, then faced the dog. "Pet, we'll follow the second scent. If it doesn't lead us to Edward, it will certainly lead us to answers." His wife trembled again. "But I'm sure it will lead us to Edward." Jane gave a ferrety nod and flattened herself, ready for him to start running once more. G wasn't nearly as excited to be reunited with poor dear Edward as Jane was, though. He wondered if that made him a bad person. Several hours later, and after a too brief nap, G became a horse and Jane became a girl. He wondered what they were going to do with no saddle, which they'd left in their rush from the barn, but Jane didn't hesitate to climb up on his back. At this particular era in time, it was scandalous for a woman to ride with no saddle. It would be considered reprehensible, and possibly justification for a prison sentence, for a woman to ride with no saddle on a horse who is really a man, even if that man were her husband. No one had ever ridden G before. It was a strange, but not entirely unpleasant, sensation to feel Jane's weight on his back, her legs gripping him around the middle.
"Do you mind if I hold on to your mane?"
she asked in as proper a voice as she would have used at a dinner party when asking, "Would you mind passing the butter?" G held his head back toward her in response. She took a handful, but didn't hold too tightly.
"Let's go find Edward, Pet," she said to the waiting dog. "This scent must lead us to Helmsley."
"Yes," G thought a bit glumly. "Let's find Edward." They walked for hours, until he felt Jane slump against his neck, and then slip dangerously to the side. G lurched the opposite way to counterbalance, and she was able to right herself.
"I'm sorry," Jane said. "I'll hold on tighter."
They needed food, G thought. Neither of them had eaten more than a few bites of dried meat for almost 2 days. Everything from the saddlebag was gone now, and the bag itself left behind because even that small weight would slow them.
"We need food,"
Jane said, as if she'd read his mind. But in order to get food, they would have to forage. None of them had experience. Or they would have to hunt. None of them had ever killed an animal. Or they would have to head closer to civilization, where there might be soldiers who wanted to kill them. And he couldn't do any of these things in his current state. All he could do as a horse was try to walk evenly.
"I'll find something,"
she announced. G stopped, and she slid from his back. He waited as she wandered off, returning a few minutes later with a small handful of dark purple berries.
"I gathered all I could find. They're Dorset berries. They're safe. I read about them in Poisonous and Non-Poisonous Berries of the Wild, The Joys of Surviving England on a Budget. At least I think they're the safe ones. The pictures in the book weren't very clear."
With that shining endorsement, she laid the berries out on a piece of cloth, divided them up into three even groups, placed one pile in front of Pet and another in the palm of her hand. She lifted it to G's mouth, and he ate them, trying desperately not to chomp off one of her fingers in his excitement over food. Jane looked at her hands, now covered with horse slobber.
"Gross."
She wiped her palms down G's flank. You can have that back. Then she ate the other pile. We'll need to go to a village, she said, her lips stained purple. Again, exactly what G had been thinking. Soon enough, they hit a road, and it was only a little while after that they came upon a small town centered around a giant tavern with a wooden sign above its door that bore the silhouette of a mangy-looking dog. It was nearly dusk, and the three weary travelers had no money and nothing to trade with, so they stayed at the edge of the forest to come up with a plan. Jane loved coming up with plans. She climbed down from G and put the cloak over his back, anticipating the change. Then she crept up behind a tree and peeked around the edge of the trunk to survey the village. The sun touched the horizon. In a flash, G was a man. He held the cloak around him and jogged over to Jane. There was a brightness in her eyes and a smile on her face that made his heart lift.
"There's a storehouse in the back of the tavern," she said excitedly. "I saw a man loading dead rabbits and cured beef inside."
"Oh, I'm sure they lock it up. We'd have better luck if I broke into a house."
"We're not going to steal it."
She shook her head as though she couldn't believe he would suggest such a thing. "I just meant they have food and we can get some. By we, I mean you. You'll have to go in there and do something in trade." She imagined standing in the corner reading poetry for a different group of strangers, a ferret riding on his shoulder. He imagined the ferret biting him if she didn't like the poem, not that he'd had a chance to prepare anything, or bring a page with anything. The first time he'd read for a crowd, he'd meant to recite the poem from memory. He'd gotten to, "All the world's a... blah," before his mind went blank, and he'd mumbled a few words that vaguely rhymed, and then fled. "I'm not sure that's the best course," he said. "My skills are somewhat limited, thanks to my daily horse diversion, and I haven't... in a while. I mean..." Jane blushed bright red.
"Anyway, we're married, and do you think anyone would really pay you for that?"
She blinked a few times before it hit him. She meant, consummation. And that no one would pay him for it sounded something like an insult, but there was no time for offended feelings now.
I haven't... "Never mind that," Jane waved the topic away. "Don't do whatever you were thinking about doing. Just clean some tables or scrub the floor. Taverns always have dirty floors, don't they? What with the sloshing ale and the vomiting?"
Jane seemed rather overcritical of taverns in general. "I see. I can do that." He started down the hill, but she stopped him. Probably good. He was wearing only the cloak, he realized.
"Wait, I'm going with you."
"But you're about to change," he pointed out.
"I'll go as a ferret, in your boot."
"Jane," he protested, "this could be dangerous. We don't know what to expect in there. I won't be able to concentrate if I'm worrying about you. But please, stay here and stay safe." She frowned and looked like she was about to protest, but then there was a flash of light, her clothes fell to the ground, and she was a ferret. She took the clothes and dressed. They were still warm from the heat of her body and still smelled of her faint perfume. He was tempted to take a moment to breathe it in, but Jane the ferret was edging toward his boot. "No, darling, stay here. I'll come right back, I promise." She stopped, let out a long ferret sigh, and deflated until she was lying flat on the ground. She looked unbearably bored. "Consider taking a nap," he said. "You've earned it." The inside of the tavern was well lit and filled with men and women in plain but sturdy clothes, most covered with some kind of fur, as though everyone worked with animals. They didn't have the look of farmers. An odd stink rode under the scents of roasted meat and bread, but the food made his stomach grumble loudly. It was all he could do to keep from launching himself onto the nearest plate. Conversation died as everyone stopped what they were doing and turned to look at him. "Ah, hello," he gathered his courage. This was just like reading poetry, but subtract poems and add people casually placing hunting knives and daggers on their tables. One of the women was filing her fingernails into sharp points like claws. Just like reading poetry. G regathered his courage and strode to the far end of the room toward the bar. He had to squeeze in between two burly men with tear-shaped scars on their faces. They all smelled vaguely like wet dog. A young man at the end of the bar leaned forward and smirked at him in a decidedly unpleasant manner. The bartender eyed him.
"What do you want?"
"I..." She had never needed to admit to not having money before. "I don't suppose you have any work that needs doing around here."
"Work?"
This fellow clearly had not so much brain as earwax. "I could clean the tables or scrub the floor." The bartender pointed to a haggard-looking serving wench who scowled at him.
"Nail here, does that?"
"Or I could peel potatoes, or carrots, or onions, or any root vegetable, really." She had never peeled anything before, but how hard could it be?
"We have someone who does that, too," the man said. "What don't you push off? This isn't the place for you."
G would have suggested yet more menial tasks he'd never attempted, but at that moment he put together the hints. The wet dog smell, the fur on everyone's clothes, the defensive, protective behaviour when he, a stranger, entered. That, and they were eating beef, cow, possibly that village's only cow. All at once he knew. This was the pack.
Yes, perhaps I should be pushing off, as you suggest, he started to say. Rat!
Someone near the door lurched from his chair, making it topple over behind him.
There's a rat!
It couldn't be Jane, he thought. He'd told her to stay put.
It's not a rat, you daft idiot, cried another. It's a squirrel. It's some kind of weasel.
Bollocks. It was his wife.
It's dinner, that's what it is.
That was the man directly to G's right.
And he's a spy, asking all those questions about vegetables.
She's clearly a ferret, G yelled as he lunged toward the dear little creature dashing about on the floor. But Jane was too far away and everyone was suddenly moving, weapons in hand, as they rushed toward G. He tried to dart to one side, but the man who wanted to eat Jane for supper threw out his arm and caught G in the throat. G immediately dropped and gagged. Over the thunder of footfalls on hardwood and shouts of, "Get the rat!" Gifford heard the most terrifying sound of all, a loud shriek, followed by silence. Someone had stepped on Jane. G shoved himself up and pushed through the crowd until he reached his wife, who looked like she was preparing for another good scurry. Nothing broken then, probably, hopefully. G grabbed her up in his arms. From the exit, a series of loud barks sounded. Pet! G tucked the ferret against his chest and turned to flee. There were a half dozen people in the way. He curled his shoulders around Jane and ran head-on into them, barreling through the press of people and, after a few bright bursts of light, dogs and wolves. If there'd been any doubt before that this was the pack, it was gone now. But somehow, in spite of the various daggers and swords they slashed at him, G finally made it to the door. Pet was on the other side, snarling and biting at those who would follow. Gosh, we love that dog. And she stayed back to give G time to escape. He ran as fast as he could as a man, and after a few minutes he found himself alone in the forest, just a shuddering Jane against his chest. He let himself slow down. It was then that he finally registered the stabs of pain in his arms and legs. He must have been cut during the scuffle. G dropped to one knee to catch his breath and relaxed his hold on Jane.
Well, at least no one will ever try to say that our married life has not been exciting, right, my dear? But I thought we agreed that it would be for the best if you stayed in the woods.
She didn't respond. All at once he became aware of the blood soaking the front of his shirt, and how unusually quiet she was. Jane was never quiet. She was hurt. G threw off his cloak, laid it on the ground, and placed the ferret on top. It was too dark for him to see anything besides the outline of her small body and her breath coming in fast, short gasps. He ran his fingers down her side and discovered a long, deep gash. He tore a piece from his shirt and wrapped the cloth around her, hoping to staunch the flow of blood. "Jane," his voice shook, "tell me you're all right." Of course, Ferret Jane couldn't answer. She just looked up at him, limp in the bundle of the cloak. A tiny whimper escaped her. Brush crackled and G whirled, but it was Pet. In a flash of light, she was a naked girl.
"The other dogs won't follow."
She flashed into a dog again, came over, sniffed at Jane and whined. G closed his eyes and bowed his head. "Jane, Jane, you stubborn girl." He carefully picked her up and cradled her against him. "I'm going to get you to Helmsley. Don't leave me before then, Jane. Don't leave me. Go, Pet." The dog took off and G followed her, running like he'd never run before. He ran flat out for at least 10 minutes. And then he kept on running because Jane was depending on him, and now it was his turn to save her life. 22. Edward. A dog was barking. Stupid dog. Edward had been lying awake for hours trying to sleep, but he found his bed uncomfortable and his head full of women. Mary, with her great velvet-encased rear end upon his throne, which irked him. Jane, shut up inside a cold, dark room somewhere, weeping because she thought he was dead, which, okay, well, Edward liked the idea of Jane mourning him more than he would have admitted out loud. It did seem appropriate that she would grieve for him. She was his best friend, after all. But the idea of Jane locked away in London and him here, helpless to go to her, nettled him. And then there was Bess, with her complicated plans that all seemed to come down to Edward in treating the King of France, one of his least favourite people, for help, which felt an awful lot like begging, and kings did not beg. Plus Gran, with her disgusting tonics and her razor tongue and the infuriating way she had of making him feel like a boy who had only played as king. And Gracie. 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 The way she'd said she liked his smile. The surprising roughness of her hand against his when she'd given him the little wooden fox. Her trousers, because she was too stubborn to wear skirts like a proper female. Her finger against his lips, back in the barn. Her eyes full of danger and fun. Her untamable hair. Her laugh. Of course she was always laughing at him, it seemed, mocking him, knocking him onto his backside, disobeying his commands, even the simple ones like "call me Edward." How hard could it be to call him Edward? Edward was vexed. The dog was still barking, a sound that bounced off the stone walls of the old keep, loud and constant. Edward turned over onto his side and yanked at the tangled covers. The mattress was lumpy, stuffed with a combination of wool and straw. In the palace he'd slept on a feather bed with fine sheets and the softest of furs. He'd never had to clean his own shirt, or see to his own chamber pot, or subsist on rabbit stew for 3 nights in a row. "Burp! Burp! Burp!" went the dog. "And let's not forget the women." He found himself suddenly overtaken by women, and not the demure and silent young ladies that fawned over him at court. Oh, no. He had to be surrounded by opinionated women who delighted in bossing him around. Aggravating, unkissable women. And still the blasted dog would not stop barking. "Even the dogs here are ill-mannered," he thought as he crammed a pillow over his head and pressed it to his ear. In the palace, the dogs never barked all night.
That was not allowed.
Pets certainly never barked unless there was something wrong. Something urgent. Pet never...
Edward sat up. Of course, at that exact moment, the barking stopped.
The night fell so silent that he was afraid that his eardrums would burst. He was straining so hard to listen. Then he heard a door bang somewhere in the keep and muffled voices in the hallway. Alarmed voices. Edward got out of bed and quickly put on his pants and boots. More doors were slamming downstairs, and there was the scrape of heavy furniture being dragged across the floor. The castle could be under attack. It wasn't outside the realm of possibility. If Mary caught on that he was alive, she'd send soldiers to dispatch him straight away. Edward looked around for a sword, but all he could find was a butter knife and his half of the broken broomstick, which would have to do. He stuck the knife in his boot, tightened his grip on the broom, threw open his chamber door, and stepped out into the hall. Immediately he was hit with an invisible wall of Gran's skunk stench, so strong it could have knocked him over. Another ominous sign. Edward crept down the stairs, his heart thundering, his hair practically standing on end. The entire population of the castle added up to 7 people. Edward, Gracie, Bess, Gran, a cook, an old lady-in-waiting who served as a housekeeper, and an ancient man-at-arms who could hardly lift his sword. If they were set upon by soldiers, they were done for. His head would be delivered to Mary in a basket come morning. The main hall was deserted, not even the fireplace flickering, but Edward could hear voices. He followed the sound to the kitchens, banging, yelling. Carefully he pushed open the door a crack. What he saw through the crack was Gran. The old lady was moving with uncharacteristic swiftness around the kitchen, lighting candles, followed closely by a drawn and grim-faced Bess. "Yarrow, that's what I need," Gran said to Bess. "It's a purple star-shaped flower. It should be in my storeroom, hanging from the rafters. And horsetail, if you can find it. Go!" Bess darted out of the room through the back door, which led out into the ruined courtyard. Then Gran put her foot up on a chair and hiked up her gown, showing a purple-veined leg. She started to hack at her underskirt with a kitchen knife. Edward must have made a sound then, because Gran looked up. "Get in here, boy!" she barked. Edward obeyed. No one else was in the kitchen. The long table in the centre had been cleared off, and in the middle there was a cloak and something on it. Something dark and furry. An animal of some kind. "Are you cooking something?" Edward asked stupidly. "What's happening?" Gran tossed him what was left of her undergarments. "Here, tear this into strips!" Before he could form a coherent protest, the door to the courtyard burst open, and Gracie and a stranger came in, lugging a large bucket of water between them. They went straight to the fire and poured the water into the cauldron that hung over the flames. "Good! Now go to Elizabeth in the storeroom and help her find what I need. You know something of plants, I think," Gran said to Gracie, who nodded and slipped out again. "You," Gran said to the man who'd helped Gracie bring in the bucket, "sit down before you fall down. I don't want to be stitching up your head tonight as well." The man swallowed like it would hurt him to attempt to speak. He was sweat-stained and unwashed, and he looked exhausted. He pulled a chair over to the table and sank into it, gazing down at the tiny creature. It was a mink, Edward thought, similar to a pelt his sister Mary wore as a scarf around her neck in the winter months. Beautiful soft fur. But why all this fuss over a mink? The man reached out a hand to stroke the small head with such tenderness that Edward's breath caught, but the creature didn't stir. The man's lips moved. A word that resembled, "Please." "Edward, the linens!" Gran snapped. The man looked up at Edward and met his eyes. It was Gifford Dudley, Jane's husband. Here, the look on his face like his heart was being rent in two, like the little mink on the table meant more to him than anything else in the world, like it was him dying. Edward's breath left his lungs. "Is that Jane?" he gasped. "Jane, is that Jane?" Gran grabbed him by the collar and dragged him away from the table.
Yes, it's Jane, and she's hurt, and I'm really going to need those linens, boy.
Immediately, Edward set to tearing up the linens, all the while watching Gifford, who kept his eyes on the table.
Jane! Jane!
His expression so miserable and so lost that it was no wonder Edward hadn't recognized him at first. What had happened to them? The water in the cauldron was hot. Edward finished tearing up Gran's underskirt, and Bess and Gracie returned with the herbs. Gran brought a candlestick over to the table and peeled the bandages back to reveal the mink's long, blood-streaked body. Edward's heart was in his throat as Gran peered at the small form.
"She was wounded in this form, not as a human?" she asked Gifford gruffly.
Gifford nodded. "We were trying to... I don't know what happened, really." His voice faded. "It was so fast." Bess handed Gran a bowl of the paste she'd made from the herbs and a basin of hot water. Gran began to clean Jane's wounds. Within moments, the water was pink. Edward felt light-headed, and also like he might lose his rabbit stew dinner.
"Edward," Gran said quietly, her eyes never leaving her work, "you sit down too."
He sat and took some deep breaths until he felt marginally less queasy.
"Jane's an Ethian,"
he whispered as he watched Gran tend to the little creature.
"So it would seem," Gran said. "All this time, it's all she ever wanted, to be an Ethian." "What is she, exactly?" Edward asked.
"A ferret," Gifford answered tonelessly. "She's a ferret."
"She'd be better off a girl right now," Gran said. "If you're hurt as a human, the wound will be less in your Ethian form. Not gone, mind you, but less. If you're in the animal form when you come to harm..."
Her lips tightened as she stared down at Ferret Jane.
"It would be better if she were human. I could see her wounds more clearly, without the fur, for one thing."
"Can't we get her to change somehow?" Edward asked, his voice cracking. Gran shook her head.
"The body will stay in whatever shape it feels safest, which is typically the animal. There has to be a conscious decision to overcome the fear and prompt the change. No, we must wait for her to wake up."
She drew the cloak up over the ferret's body like she was tucking a child into bed.
"We must wait," she said again.
"But what if she doesn't wake up?" thought Edward. But he didn't say it. He couldn't. Gran put one hand on Edward's shoulder and the other on Gifford's.
"It's late. I don't suppose I'm going to convince either of you to get some rest?"
They both shook their heads. She sighed.
"All right. You watch over her, then. Come wake me if anything happens."
It was morning, the sun not yet visible but lighting the eastern sky, when Jane changed. Edward would not have believed it if he hadn't seen it. The ferret one moment, his cousin the next, lying curled under the cloak. He jumped to his feet and ran to fetch Gran, but he'd only gone a few steps when he heard Jane moan a name.
"Gee," she said. "Gifford, her husband."
He remembered with a pang. Gifford was her husband because Edward had asked her to marry the young lord, even though she'd begged him not to make her go through with it. She'd listened to Edward, which was why she was lying there now in bandages. It was all his fault. He was a terrible best friend. He turned. Gifford was holding Jane's hand. He brought it to his face and pressed it to his cheek, then kissed her palm.
"Jane,"
he whispered,
"wake up."
Her eyes moved behind her eyelids, then fluttered open.
"Gee,"
she said again, and the corner of her mouth lifted in a smile.
"I thought I might not see you again."
"You'll have to work harder than that to be rid of me," Gifford said. Edward suddenly felt like he was intruding on something intimate. He took a step backward toward the exit, and his foot shuffled against the rough stone floor. Jane looked over Gifford's shoulder and saw him. "Edward?" she breathed, her brown eyes widening. "Edward!" She gave a choked cry and reached out. Of course he went to her. Gifford straightened and moved out of his way so that Edward could sit beside her and clasp her hand in his.
"You're alive," Jane said. "I kept asking to see your body, but they wouldn't let me, and I thought that perhaps it was all a ruse and you weren't really gone, that they were lying to me, that you were out there somewhere, and that meant that I wasn't really the Queen and I shouldn't be there, but it felt like wishful thinking."
All of those words seemed to exhaust her, and she whimpered and sank back on the table. He noticed then that there was blood seeping through the cloak. He turned to ask Gifford to go get Gran, but Gifford had already gone. Gran came hustling through the door, rolling up her sleeves.
"Gran,"
Jane said, "we found you after all."
"Be quiet, dear," Gran said. "Rest now."
Jane sighed and closed her eyes. Gran smoothed the red hair back from Jane's forehead and started to draw the cloak away from her. Then she stopped and glared at Edward.
"Out with you," she ordered. "You too, horse boy."
Edward turned to see Gifford standing in the doorway, his expression tight. They went outside together, where the first rays of sun were touching the highest stones of the keep.
"I have to go," Gifford said. "Will you—" "I'll stay with her,"
Edward offered. Gifford lowered his head and nodded stiffly toward his chest.
"Thank you."
Then he was moving away from Edward in long strides across the grass, shedding his clothes as he went, until a light flashed, and he was no longer walking, but galloping across the field. Edward sat down on the ground next to the door and leaned against the wall, drawing his knees up to his chest. He was cold and he was tired, but he didn't care. He'd be there for Jane the minute Gran allowed him back into the room.
"Sire?"
said a soft voice. He glanced up. Gracie was holding a cup of something out to him. He took it. It was hot, steam curling off the top. It warmed his hands.
"Please say this isn't one of Gran's potions," he said.
"Only one way to find out,"
she replied. He took a sip.
"Tea. No milk or sugar, but tea, all the same."
"Thank you," he said. "You're perfect. I mean, it's perfect, thank you."
"Well, that's what the English drink in times of crisis, I hear."
She lifted her arms over her head and stretched, then yawned, then smiled.
"We Scots prefer whiskey."
He was too tired to smile back properly. He drank the tea slowly, savouring the heat that filled his belly. He felt his shoulders start to relax.
"You really love her, don't you?"
Gracie asked him as she took the empty cup from his hand.
"Jane?"
"Yes, I love her," he said. "We've known each other all our lives."
He was about to say something more about how Jane was like a sister to him, that kind of affection between them, but then he heard a mad, joyful little bark, and Pet was on him. The dog wiggled and danced all over him, whining and whimpering and yipping, her tail wagging like mad. He grinned and tried to pet her, but she wouldn't hold still. It was only when she started to lick his face that he remembered that there was a girl, someone in there, a person, and he sobered and tried to get to his feet.
"Someone's happy to see you," Gracie remarked.
Yes, he said.
"Down, Pet, down."
There was a flash, and she was a naked girl.
"Your Majesty," she said earnestly, "I am so glad to see you. I followed your scent all the way here, and I thought I'd lost it once, but I found it again. I would have come more quickly, but you told me to protect Jane, so I stayed with them."
He resisted the urge to say, "Good girl," and pat her on the head.
"Well done, Pet," he said instead. "You did well to stay with Jane."
He would never get used to Pet being a naked girl. Her hair was long and thick, and it fell over her in all the needed places, but it still shocked him every single time. He wasn't the only one. Gracie was standing there with her mouth open. It was the most taken aback he'd ever seen her. He would have laughed if the whole situation weren't so completely uncomfortable. "So, Pet," he said, and cleared his throat, "I'd like you to meet Gracie McTavish. Gracie, this is Petunia Bannister, my, bodyguard felt like the wrong word. Protector seemed unmanly. Companion could be taken the wrong way. Watch person, he settled on finally. Pet cocked her head to one side and stared at Gracie. Then she sniffed the air. Fox, she deduced, her nose wrinkling in disgust.
So, you're the one I smelt.
Charmed, I'm sure, Gracie said wryly. In a flash, Pet was a dog again. She crouched next to Edward's feet, gave Gracie a baleful stare, and then growled low in her throat. I'm sorry, Edward said, mortified on so many levels. She's never been too fond of strangers. He bent to admonish the hound. Gracie saved my life, Pet. She's my friend. Pet laid her head down on her paws and sighed heavily. He glanced up to find Gracie staring at him. What? He asked. I know it's a bit unconventional, but her family has been serving the royal line for generations, apparently, and I only knew she was an Ethian a few weeks ago, I swear.
Is that what I am? Your friend? Gracie asked.
Of course, he said.
Because I saved your life?
Yes. I mean, no. I mean, he didn't know which answer she wanted. He paused to collect himself. Do you consider me your friend? Gracie shook her head.
I don't know what to consider you, sire.
His teeth came together. Edward, he corrected. Pet growled again. He frowned at her, and she fell silent.
Is there anything else I don't know about you? Gracie asked. Any more surprises we have in store?
There was so much she didn't know about him, he thought, that he would like her to know. But he answered, "Nope, I think that's it."
All right, then, she gave a little bow. Your Majesty, Pet, I must take my leave for now. Your granny has asked me to procure some items for her, and I cannot refuse the old lady.
Procure, as in steal? Edward asked. Dimples.
It's best not to ask too many questions, sire. You worry yourself about your Jane. Leave me to my own devices.
Your Jane. He settled back into his spot against the wall. Your Jane. Like Jane belonged to him somehow. And had that been an edge in Gracie's voice when she said it? Like she was jealous? Like she wished that she could be his Gracie? He could only hope.
She's going to live, Gran announced some time later, startling Edward from where he was most definitely not sleeping. She's asking for you. I've put her in your bed, as it's the most comfortable in the keep. Don't wear her out with talking. She'll heal quickly, but she needs rest.
He told Pet to stay, and ran all the way up the stairs. Jane was sitting propped up with pillows. She looked tired and vaguely ill, with lavender circles under her eyes and her lips pale as chalk, but she smiled at him bravely.
You're alive,
she felt compelled to point out again.
So are you, he replied, sitting down carefully next to her. We're miracles, you and I.
I'm a ferret,
she said, like she was confessing a great sin that she wasn't sorry for. "I noticed that, too. I'm a kestrel, pleased to make your acquaintance, and it would be rather splendid, except that when I fly I seem to lose my brain. I'm working on it. Flying should be useful when I can control it more. I can fly ahead and scout, spy on people. I can't wait to spy on people. Just think of all the dirt I'll dig up.